Hello, Playdate. This is Don.
This is Nick.
And I'm Ryan.
This week, we are covering Playdate news.
Recent indie releases.
And pretending like we all played the game of the week.
Ryan, showing our hand. Thank you for listening. Let's get started.
Let's get started indeed with the news and notes. Starting out with some catalog stats. Did you guys see this? Hey, if you scroll down in our show notes, co-hosts, not listeners, there's some catalog stats. They always come out with these lovely little infographics bathed in yellow, appropriately so. And this time they're talking about 1 year in our Playdate game store by the numbers. They have 181 games, and they've earned over $500,000 for developers, which is great. What do you guys think of that so far? 181 games, $500,000 or so?
Yeah, the $500,000 is what's been paid out to developers.
Word.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's over 190 now because this was 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks? 2 weeks?
2 weeks? Today's the 23rd. It was 20 days ago.
Is that
right? Two drops ago. Somebody was knocking the amount. Oh, it didn't sound like that much. And I was like, well, for one thing, a year ago, there were even less units out there and didn't launch with 180 games. I was trying to remember how many it launched with. It was like 40 or something? 80? I don't remember. But either way, it's just grown every week, both in install base and in games. So I thought it was great. I think it's really cool. These are good stats. These are worth bragging about.
Yeah. Word, especially for a fledgling system like this. Yeah, Nick, I'm sorry. You were going to say something?
I think one of the most interesting is that the average game price has been brought way up from what I assumed it would be going
now. Now can we talk about this and not hate one another afterward? Is this going to be okay, guys?
I think Don and I can. Prices? I'm not sure.
Yeah, right? Unlikely.
Okay, I'll step away for the time being.
I'm excited to see that the average price is over $5. That's really surprising, and really cool to see.
So what did you think it was going to be? Like, I see this price and I think, man, that sounds super gosh darn reasonable.
It is. That's exactly my point. But I would have assumed that it would have been much lower based on the games that we talk about from Itch, which are typically priced lower than games which come out on catalog. So this kind of reinforces, I don't have the statistics for Itch, but it reinforces that the catalog marketplace is not driving the cost of each application down artificially.
Can you say that again, but faster? I lost my place there.
In little kid language?
There's no race to the bottom with catalog pricing.
Oh, good.
Yes, yeah. Good point. No iPhone pricing here.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Yeah, I think we can all get on board with that. I don't think we need to argue, guys. Hey, we still like each other. Speaking of pricing, it also said that the average price in catalog anniversary sale was $450. So, yeah, not quite a buck less, but, you know, maybe an average of 20% savings on games during that catalog anniversary sale we ran across a while back. You have any big thoughts, big feelings about that?
There were what, like 100 games or so on sale, so roughly half on sale. Yeah, I would have guessed $6 was the average price. It seems like most of the games I'm interested in are $6 to $9. Yeah, I don't know. Nothing on here like was super shocking in my opinion. I kind of wondered, I was hoping anyway that more users would have bought a game. Like, it looked like basically two people, or most people bought two games per unit. Mm-hmm. But of course, not everybody had a game unit until later in the life of the Playdate. So hopefully that number goes up. Do you guys remember, there was a statistic a while back that of how many people registered their usernames instead of having just a long string of numbers. Mm. And it was kind of low. It was like 50% or something, if I recall right.
I'm surprised it's that high.
Do you remember either one of you?
I don't remember the number, but yeah, I mean, that's not super surprising because it means that the user needs to interact with play.date. And outside of initial setup, I'm not sure how frequently that occurs, especially for early units where this functionality wasn't present out of the box. So it just depends on how plugged in those users were.
Yeah, and if 1/3 of the people invested enough in the play date to do a bi-weekly podcast, i.e. me, is not going to do such a thing, then how would more than 50% of people get on there and change their playdate name? If I wasn't doing this, I probably would just leave it alone and not have changed it to Hello Playdate Podcast, honestly. Because who am I gonna compete against? Who's gonna know who I am?
Wow, in the playdate community? Strong words there, Ryan. At the top of every leaderboard. Oh, Ryan, please. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah,
exists.
You think so? I feel like the leaderboards are visible on most of the games, if not all of the games, where there is a leaderboard. Like, you don't have to go to the site. If I saw a bunch of numbers, that happens on iPhone games all the time. I'm like, oh, I need to change this to something.
I need,
if it required to me to do additional
personal steps, information, yeah.
If it required me to do additional steps, like go to the internet and log in and all that jazz, okay. No, I would
that's
not.
That's fair. Yeah, that's fair.
So,
go ahead.
Can we talk about this statistic here that 1,500 players bought their first game on Catalog in the anniversary sale?
No. Wait. 1,500 players first bought a game. Okay. I thought you said bought their first game. That is not what it says.
Those are equivalent.
Yeah, it's the same thing. First game from the catalog, anyway.
Ryan,
which I would assume they're not buying them on itch before that.
Nick, you're right, and I'm insane. I'm sorry. I thought this was inferring that perhaps they had purchased a game on, let's say, itch before.
Oh.
And they had never purchased any game ever before.
Well,
is what it was saying.
Panic doesn't have a way to verify that. But
right.
What they can verify is which users are actually purchasing stuff in the catalog. Yeah. And it's far more likely for a user, we've talked about this before, but it's far more likely for a user to use an on-device storefront than it is for them to go to itch.io, despite how easy it is to do. Amen. So yeah. Yes. Like Ryan,
like me.
I was gonna say, early on, you know, we kind of helped you get started with sideloading. And if we hadn't done that, or if Catalog was there from day one, would you have ever done it?
It would have taken me a real long time, and listening to a show like this, who's bragging about all these killer indie games and, you know, piquing my interest, then maybe I would have reached out to somebody in my life to say, hey, what do I do? How do I do this? How do I sideload a game? Or looked it up somehow. But it would have taken me quite a while and some urging from, you know, excitement in the community to do it. So yeah, I don't know how long it would have taken me, but it would have taken a long time without your hand holding. So thank you. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, my point was not to
shame.
Not to shame you. My point was that you are what I would say is a ready? Typical user who may not wish to interact with their device outside of the confines of the tightly controlled ecosystem that might be built into the system itself.
I think that's probably true. I think we have an unfair bias here because we have a lot of developers listening, a lot of tech savvy people listening, and a lot of people who are just like, you know, digital native, and that doesn't bother them. But I'm very much Gen X or Zennial or whatever you want to call me, and I know the world pre-tech, and I, you know, occasionally I long for that, and I long for a cartridge that I can hold in my hand and a non-downloadable experience. And so, I don't know, sometimes I get old man about it and start yelling from my porch that I don't want to do another step and get on the internet again, because I've been on the internet enough already today. Get off my lawn.
I've seen
yeah.
I don't want to go there anymore. But having 1500 players buy their first game on catalog during the sale shows both the power of sales and the power of this captive ecosystem. I think it's a really important stat.
Agreed. And also, if you combine that with the next statistic, which is 150,000 game purchases have been made on catalog, it means that their user base increased by at least 10%, if not more. Like, maybe those prior game purchases were doubled up from a single user, or tripled up from a single user. So maybe this sale increased the catalog users by way more than 10%. I think this is really interesting, actually.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hope, right?
A resounding mm-hmm. All right. We also have top regions for game purchases. We've got the US of A, we've got the U of K, we've got the CA, which is Canada, we've got Japan and Denmark, I believe. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's Denmark.
Okay. Cool. And I think that's all the stats on the little infographic they provided, but I thought that was pretty interesting. Wanted to make sure we chat about that on here, even if 3 weeks after the fact.
Also, the biggest game is Jezak, Nevin mentioned in our Discord.
Biggest meaning the
largest
file size, yes. Yeah. That's right. We missed a couple stats here. Biggest game is 107 megs. And the smallest game is 30K, my land. And the average game size is 5 megs.
Yeah, they pack a lot of stuff in there. I don't know what the smallest game is, but...
I think
it sounds right.
Yo-Yozo, wasn't it? There was some chatter.
No, Yo-Yozo was... Yo-Yozo's 39.
Oh, close.
Ooh. Eno checked, but it was close.
Huh. Yeah, it's gonna be... Okay, yeah. That's all.
Most of the Matt Sefton games are really sleek or tidy, lean. That's the word I'm looking for.
There you go. Either of those work. In the meantime, why don't we move on to our next news and note, which is, oh my God, you guys, do you have your hankies out? Do you have your heart glasses on? Because the next news and note is about a Playdate Pulp proposal. Did you guys see this? A fellow by the name of The Aaron Lee, at The Aaron Lee on the Twitters, made a proposal game on the Playdate. So now Panic can boast that they've assisted in... nuptials. This is so amazing. I love this. He was talking about this on Twitter, posted this out with some lovely pictures of him and his now fiance, and was talking about the game itself, how you had to go through this particular sequence of events. It sounded like it was sort of like a platformer-ish game, and then you get to the end and there's this proposal, and there's an option to say yes or no. And if she had selected no, which she did not, she selected yes. If she had selected no, it went into this recursive loop where it would say, are you sure? And then make her go through it again. And keep doing that until she chose yes. I thought that was a really fun little admission from the Aaron Lee about how the game worked. But did you guys see this? I thought this was so sweet.
I did see the proposal. I did not try... can we play the game? I'm assuming not. I didn't look into that.
Don't know if he put it up or not. I'm not sure.
Yeah, there'll be a link in the show notes. You can see the screenshot and a picture of the couple and whatnot.
Yeah,
it is very cute.
I barely got a chance to play this week's game, let alone hunt out more games that I didn't have time to play this week. But yeah, that would be cool to see what he made. So The Aaron Lee, if by chance you're listening or someone's hearing this who knows you, let us know about that. Maybe we'll play it on a week where I can breathe at least. Nick, What is your gigantic heart thinking about the Playdate Pulp proposal?
I think it's really cool. I'm excited by the dialogue loop, which is very similar to Dragon Quest, the first one.
Nice.
Anyway, yeah, great. That's fantastic.
Awesome. Speaking my language, all you have to say is Dragon Quest. But moving on, there was an Engadget Playdate article talking about the first couple years of the Playdate. And generally, it was very positive about the Playdate. The quote that Panic wanted to highlight is that Playdate is only getting better with age. It's a little yellow inspiration machine. It's a physical reset button for the entire industry. So that was a pretty great little quote there from Engadget. I don't know. Did you guys happen to read this piece and find any more interesting quotes?
Sorry. No, I was looking for another game that I forgot to add to the show notes. And I've forgotten for like 3 weeks now.
That's okay.
Multitasking.
I don't think they said anything out of the ordinary that we don't already know. Basically touting the Playdate cost, the cover. They're talking about the stereo dock that's still hopefully forthcoming. That I made my grand projection that it will be out in 2024. I have no knowledge about this, but we'll see what happens.
But everybody's holding you to it. So
okay. I'm not sure what my consequence will be if I'm wrong, but sure, hold me to it. Also, we will include a link to that Engadget article along with everything else we're talking about in the show notes for today's episode. Speaking of which, Initial Daydream has updated to 1.0, and you know, we've mentioned that on the show before, so I thought we'd mention it, that it's available at its full download capacity.
Yeah, it's a James Game Boy game. We've mentioned in the past, but I just want to give an update on that. It is $5 on itch, so go check it out. We're a fan of James Game Boy here, and there is a soundtrack available on Bandcamp. So
nice.
Love seeing that.
And so, Don, did you toss this one in here? Gaming in the Wild 209?
Yeah, I noticed today the new episode of Gaming in the Wild does a review sort of Mars After Midnight. So we mentioned a couple episodes back that John was given a review copy of the Playdate, and so he'd been messing around with it a little bit, but now he's gone full in on a couple of the games and gave a pretty fleshed out review. So it's a short episode. It's like a half hour.
Being salty about that, getting a play date. Oh, come on, Panic.
Yeah. Anyway, worth a listen.
Sounds good. Awesome. Yeah. Any more hooting and hollering for the play date is all good in our book. So thank you, Gaming in the Wild. All right. I think that brings us to our indie inventory. Don, take the inventory away.
Yeah, thank you Ryan. So the game I keep forgetting to mention, Ledbetter brought it up in our Discord. It's a game called Microwave Story. It's Samuel Price. It's by Sam Fing. And did you guys try it, Nick? You sounded excited. Did you give it a shot?
I am excited, but no, I haven't had a chance to try it yet.
Okay, I did play through it like a week or two ago, and it's what it sounds like. You put something in a microwave, you use the crank to microwave it and move on to the next item, and there's a little narrative to it. It's pretty funny. It's the less you know the better kind of type of game. It's not very long. I think I played through it in 5 minutes, less than 10 minutes anyway, so definitely check it out. Name your own price. It's pretty charming and unique.
The visuals look like they would be perfectly suited for the Playdate screen, meaning like you've got this inside view of the microwave, which I can imagine holding the Playdate in your hand, the Playdate sort of simulates the actual microwave itself, and the screen looks like the window into the microwave. I love that formatting concept. Nice work.
This was a hard one to find. I kept trying to search for microwaves and stuff on itch. It doesn't list itself. I don't know what the deal is.
Huh.
I found it in the Discord, but it was buried in there. But it'll be in our show notes, so you don't have to search. It'll be right there.
Nice. Nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for the show notes, Don.
Yeah, no problem. Next up is No Caddy Included. This one is a golf game. It looks amazing. Has a demo. I went to play it today, and my daughter got out of school early, so I did not get a chance to try it yet. It just came out the other day. It's $9, but like I said, there is a demo. It is a side-scrolling golf game, but it looks like there's a lot to it. It's got wind. It's got turf, front nine, back nine, two courses. You can register players and whatnot. So it looks fairly full-featured. Multiplayer pass and play.
Ooh, what? All right.
Yeah.
Now so, you're talking.
One of the comments played the demo on the bus. This is legit good. And it has been submitted to catalog. Anyway,
looking forward to there's it. One for the back of the box, man. That's awesome.
This is legit.
Played it on the bus. Yeah.
Yeah.
In all seriousness, I'm looking at these GIFs and this looks killer. Don, I know you like a good golf game. Mm-hmm. This looks like it's going to be right up your alley. And I was thinking this looks like it's worth the price of purchase at $9, period, yeah. Let alone a pass and play feature. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, pretty fun. The Playdate's so easy to pass around too.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
No cables to swap right? over the coffee table and whatnot.
Yeah.
So neat. Pretty cool.
Very cool. Thanks for bringing this to our attention.
Yeah. This was a rough one because there's so many demos, and then we'll talk about PlayJam 5 here in a second, but all the PlayJam stuff kind of flooded. And so it's a little difficult to navigate. Oh, what are new games? What are PlayJam games? So this one was made for Fish Fest. This is called Orbit Angler. It is somewhat fleshed out, though. It's not just a little demo. This is by Tom Rhodes. And the idea is you have a little booster rocket, and you use the crank to kind of crank it up, and it swings around in this little, like, fish bowl. And then I think you push up on the D-pad, or A, maybe. Anyway, you fling it out, and then you have so much fuel that you can kind of boost the rocket around. So you're trying to boost it as far away as you can, so it'll orbit around and then crash land back on your planet. So I don't know if that makes sense. Kind of like if you were fishing and you're trying to throw the bob route as far as you can. Except it's in zero gravity going around the planet.
I'm laughing only because of these GIFs. The once you shoot away from the planet, it looks like you're this spaceship just circling and circling, spinning and spinning in space, and you're only able to boost at opportune times, like when your spaceship is pointing back at the planet, but that only happens once every, you know, second or so because you're spinning so fast. It looks really funny.
You can boost whenever you want, just whoever is playing it is boosting to get away from the planet, I guess, in the GIF.
Looks like a hoot.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I thought they were trying to get closer to the planet.
I think they're just trying to build up speed to get a wider orbit.
Maybe that's the case. Maybe I should read these words.
Yeah,
that might help.
Anyway, I only played it a couple times, so I'm not an expert at this by any means. But you can be an expert if you download it now and name your own price. That is Orbit Angler. Next up is Aligned. I thought this was like a Shift ripoff, but it's not because it has a certain number of levels. There's 100 levels, whereas Shift is like a progressive game. You can just keep going for the most part. So I downloaded, haven't played. This is $1. I love the little icons. It has clever little patterns and whatnot. It's kind of a match three, but from four different sides. I don't know. It's just a kind of a cool looking puzzle game. Unfortunately, I don't know much right now, but it does look kind of neat. $1. Can't go wrong with that.
Neat. That does look fun, especially for a buck. Jiminy Christmas.
Mm-hmm. And then next up is Alienated. This one is in early access, but I like the pitch on here. They're trying to raise money to get it out of early access. It's on sale right now for $1.41. There is a note here. Join the fight. Your feedback will help with the formation of the game. Here's some of the possible issues and whatnot. I just like the little plea. A lot of times the Playdate games are like people's first games. They throw it up. They just talk about how bad the game is and apologize. And there's no passion, really. They're just... The passion is they put it up at all, I guess. But there's no long-term plan for the game. And I like that this one had more of a long-term plan. So I thought I'd mention it. This one is called Alienated. It's by Gilarns. And it kind of looks like the Contra levels, if I'm right, guys? Where you're on the motorcycle and you're like aiming and shooting.
Man, I'm trying to remember motorcycles in Contra. Maybe I didn't get that far.
They're like hover bikes, weren't they, Nick?
That's in Contra 3. Is that what you're thinking?
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I didn't get that far. Okay. I'm a Contra 2 kid. I'm sorry, Contra 1.
Okay. Well, anyway, you drive back and forth and shoot stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, check it out. $1.41, Alienated.
Hey, can somebody riddle me this? It says on sale for, what does that say? 93%, 83% off, some mm-hmm. giant percent off. But it says it's being sold for $1.41 right now. Sweet. Mm-hmm. But ordinarily $3. What is happening?
Why? It's in early access. A lot of times games are cheaper in early access, and then when they get their full release, they go up to regular price.
But help me with mathing here. $1.41 of $3 is not, you know, 83% off or whatever this says.
I thought it said 33%, but it might be 53. I don't know. The font is very weird.
It is hard to read, isn't it? It's not just me being old.
I mean, you are old. Here, let me copy paste the font and see what.
Is that a thing you can do on the button?
It says 53%.
That says 5?
Yes.
Fine. All right.
Hacker trick right there, Ryan.
Nice work. Thank you, Don. No helping problem. Out your old man buddy. Yeah. What do we have next?
Play Jam 5 ended today or last night. Ooh. And so now we have 16 entries to play this week and vote on. Let's see. I don't see a date for when it ends. I'm scrambling. 5 days. So 5 days, 22 hours from when we're recording right now. So hop on this when you hear the sound of my voice and play these games. If you're listening in the far future, a winner will have already been picked. But the theme was forgotten, I think. I'm very well prepared. It is You Forgot Something was the theme. And so a lot of the games look really good. I downloaded about 5 right before the show. Obviously, I haven't played them yet, but a lot of cool-looking games. Previous winners have stuck stuff in. There's a sunburn-avoiding game where you're in a pool trying to avoid a sunburn.
Do you know who made that?
I don't know.
It's Super Corporate Tax Evader.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who is that, by the way? We mentioned that game like every episode. We should know his name by now.
Don just mentioned the name. Asuka? Yeah.
Who now?
Asuka?
Huh. All right. I'll trust you.
I don't know. I don't know Japanese. But
well,
Ray has a game called First in Line where you're basically having to hit a complex number of buttons to do an open mic. Not an open mic. You're stepping in as a, what is it called when you're not the star in a play, but you're the
understudy? There you go.
Yes, I think that's the idea. So you're trying to memorize lines super quickly. There's a really cool frog recipe brewing game. There is a shredding game, Nick, like shredding paper. I don't know if you're avoiding taxes, but that's in there. Toad has a game called Quizzical where you're reading something. That's probably fun. Anyway, check it out. Lots of games in there. Link in the show notes.
Instructions. Game on Playdate.
Indeed. All right. And then Catalog had dropped today. Funny Racer, we mentioned a while back. It is out on Catalog now. $3.
That's the RC Pro-Am for the Playdate in case anyone's looking for it.
It is. You may remember that I was super bad and spent the entire race off of the track. But you might be better at it than I am. Next up, Warp one. Defender. Do you guys recall this game? Is it out already on itch?
I can't open links at the moment.
So. Oh,
Nick's on his potato computer. I'll see what I can do.
Kind of thing. I feel like I've played this on maybe it was.
Is this the one that goes between three different depths?
No. Okay. I do remember playing this because I remember the faster I went, the better I was at the game. I remember I just jacked my speed up all the way and blew through the levels really quick instead of going slow and dying.
That's my same tactic with podcasts.
Get it over with. Very nice. Yeah, sorry. It's so many games coming out now. Anyway, that's $2. Warp Defender.
Warp Defender is on itch as well. Just to let you know. And it's the same price either place, in case people are wondering.
Okay, so I guess I bought it on itch already. This one by Chris Subigo is called SCP-D38813A.
You forgot the dash.
Dash A.
Actually.
And it's a narrative game about the SCP Foundation, but I don't know what this is. I guess it's a real thing. Either one of you familiar with this?
I'm familiar with narrative games. I'm looking forward to playing it.
Yeah, this looks like a Nick kind of thing.
Yeah, my God, speaking of Nick kind of things, do you guys see this next one called Labyrinth?
Mm-hmm.
Looks like the game of the week this week. Nick, do you want to take us through this one? Oh, wait, no, you can't open anything. Never mind.
I saw the screenshot earlier, and it looks awesome. So
it does actually look pretty dope.
Reminds me of Eye of the Beholder.
Yes.
So very cool.
There's a lot of text for a playdate screen, though.
Yeah, I was thinking that, too. I'm very curious how it looks. But I'm also wondering if it would also play well using Mirror.
I was just thinking that. I was like, this is going to be the first game we play exclusively on the PC.
Not me.
Well, you found my next game of the week. So
Yeah, I'm already thinking about compares and contrast between this and Under the Tree, because in Under the well, get to it later. Never mind. Next game.
This one's by Sam Sharshian, by the way. Labyrinth, $7. And then last up, a game that I really enjoyed on itch. It's called Snecris. It's $3. It's like a side scrolling, fast paced, very charming, over the top snake game with tons of power ups and in your face graphics and exclamations. And you must see to understand what I'm saying. But if you like Bomberman and that type of thing, but you want it to be Snake instead, and even more in your face, then check out Snakeris. It's
that everything you just said there screams Ryan. Yes. I probably need to buy this game.
You do need to buy it, and it's only $3. And I don't see your name on the leaderboards. There's lots of room to move there. Either a lot of range from 9 to 1.
Either right, Ryan 1, 2, 3, 4 or Hello Blade.
Let's see what I can do. Yeah, very interesting.
That's by Dennis Schmidt. And we're done.
Fantastic. All right. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like you're looking for more boops. Well, here they come. Boopity boop boop. Pick of the week coming up from our man without a hyperlink, Nick Baldridge.
Hey, everybody.
Nick forgot we were recording.
The game for this week is called Under the Tree, and I can't load links. Who is the author?
By Yamabushi Softworks, LLC.
Thank you. Under the Tree is a modern interpretation of a game that's similar to Wizardry. It's a first-person dungeon-crawling game. To start, you're kind of thrown into it. So games of this ilk are things that I really enjoyed. I played a lot of these type of games when I was younger. Things like The Bard's Tale or Dragon Wars or Morath's World or Wizardry, upon which this one is an homage. So you start and you don't really have an idea of what's going on exactly. The game starts you in a menu talking to one of the characters that's in kind of the town area. There are three different characters, right? No, four. Hold on.
I thought there were three, right?
Is it three? There's the kind of thief character, the armorer, and then
the healthy character, the armor character, and the magic character, right?
Oh, and the thief character. Yeah. So there are four.
Mm, okay.
So there's four characters, and you can speak to them. They each give you about a sentence or two's worth of backstory. Basically, they found you, and you have been brought to this tree, and this tree has a dungeon that's been dug underneath of it or taken over by some monster. So your goal is to go down under this tree and clear this dungeon. The dungeon is 10 floors, and each one is very lengthy. There's a lot of different passages, but unlike games of this era, you don't have to draw your own map. The playdate actually has a map in the upper right corner. So your position is persistently tracked as you navigate the dungeon, and there are random encounters. So every so often you'll come across a monster, and then the monster can be killed by various means, either through the use of magic or through stabinating with the sword. So as you play through the game, you get access to new and better materials. You can bring them to the armorer and create better weapons and armor, and you learn new spells as you go. Interesting thing, there's a lot of accessibility things that I want to talk about that make this a really compelling type of this type of game, compared to those older games that I was mentioning, which are very tough to get into from a modern perspective. They require you to have a manual at hand and graph paper and all these kinds of things. And this game does not require that of you. It is also extremely forgiving. So when you fail, when you die in the dungeon, as you will over and over and over again, you're brought back to the tree, but there's really no penalty for the death. You're able to just jump back in and go to town. And in fact, the square that the monster killed you on is marked with a little frowny face. So it's pretty easy to know, okay, if this was a super powerful monster, maybe I need to go around and level up a bit before I go back and get creamed by it again. Another interesting thing to note, and I know that you all didn't have a lot of time to play this one, so you may not have realized this, but the monsters are in specific positions, but over time there will be random monsters which are spawned in different places that you can run into. So even if you've cleared an entire dungeon floor, if you are roaming around for long enough, you will come across monsters in spaces that have already been marked as clear. And that's the basics, I think. I have not finished this game. I'm on floor 9 out of 10. I've dipped a toe into 10. But this game is very intriguing and exciting to me. I've really enjoyed my time with it. So, all right, Ryan, tell me what you got.
All right, Nick, tipping his hand, letting us know an enjoyable game. I'd say altogether maybe like an hour of this game, close to an hour of this game. I did not get off the first floor. I'm going to start with some things that I really liked about it. First, I thought the music was great.
Oh, music is awesome.
There's this like, you know, sort of creepy, eerie strings vibe going on, you know, like the I really enjoyed the mood they set with the music. I thought it was really appropriate, really fun. And bouncing off something that Nick said, I've really dug that map. So the map illuminates and is revealed as you get as you encounter a new square. the next, you know, what is it, like two squares or so are lit up, like as far as you can see or so mm-hmm. in the dungeon. And it starts making your map for you. So Nick already talked about how in the ancient times of our childhood, we had to map that out in graph paper. And so this is a really handy way to keep track of where you are without multiple items nearby, meaning paper and pen and instruction booklet and all that. So that's super handy. And I like the fact that you can zoom in and zoom out of that map to see where you are a little easier, or pull back and see everywhere you've been. And man, that map feature, even in just that little less than a postage stamp area of the screen, was super useful. I thought that was a really killer implementation of map making. So great job on that. I found myself feeling like I was kind of banging my head against the wall, though, because I would get into the under the tree and start roaming around, and I'd find a rat, and I might be able to defeat a rat, but then anything else I encountered after that, I was dead. So it was right back to the beginning. All right, start again, and lather, rinse, repeat a bunch. It's just like rat die, rat die, rat die. So that felt a little repetitive to me, even though I was like getting a little more into the maze itself. It felt really slow going and sloggy for me. I also managed, and maybe this is a Ryan thing, you please tell me how this mechanic works, but I found a lock picking set. And then I went over to the treasure chest, mm-hmm. which is supposed to be lock-picked. Yep. And so I jammed the lock-pick in there, and I don't know, it looks like maybe crank the crank around or something. And like the first one, like I can't remember what it did, broke or it didn't work or whatever. Then it's like, well, you got two more chances. But I didn't know what else you I were was doing. Supposed to do.
Yeah.
So, right. So I tried, you know, cranking differently or pressing other buttons, and it didn't work. Long story short, all three of my lock picking things are gone. Yeah. And now I can't access that thing. And I don't know how or where else to pick up another lock picking set. So that was frustrating. Finally, even after spending as much time on the game as I did, going back in multiple times over, I can't buy a darn thing. Any armor, any sword, anything not only requires gold that I'm acquiring from the rats that I'm slaughtering, but it also requires tin alloy or multiples of tin and gems or whatever I need to pick up. And I might have one item, but I don't have all three of them that I need in order to conjure a sword of tin or whatever I need. So again, that was frustrating too. I felt like I had done the grinding. I made my way through the rats. I've got the gold. Let me buy this thing. But no, mm-hmm. I needed to also find these other items. And again, all of that felt a little frustrating to me.
Yeah, I can understand. And I don't know. Are you familiar with those kind of older games that I mentioned up top?
To a light degree, yes.
Okay. So they have a very similar loop. This game is a lot more forgiving, and those materials act as like a progression gate. So if you think of them less as random drops that you're going to find and more as stuff that's in specific chests that you need to unlock, in order to, progress. So you mentioned the loop of fighting a rat, getting killed by a rat, fighting a rat, getting killed by a rat. So each time you're collecting gold, there's no penalty for dying. So you retain all the gold that you had. Luckily, rats don't, you know, pocket that stuff and walk away with it. But the thing that you're feeling the frustration about is that you don't feel like you're getting any more powerful, and you're not, until you get the level up notice, which there is a menu, statistics that'll show you how far along you are towards a level 2, for example. And because you're not getting that kind of reward, that dopamine hit of, hey, you did something good. You gained a level. Or maybe you did, but I'm assuming probably only just one in about an hour's time. And the fact that you didn't unlock the chest, at least that one chest, and you didn't get any material, so you're not able to construct any of these items. Yes, I understand the frustration there. But that is kind of the design of the game, is that you're intended to explore and find these chests, unlock them, and then gain materials that you can use to create potions or vials or swords and armor and so forth. So, I do empathize with the frustration there, because it's a different type of game. It's a different difficulty style than pretty much any modern game that we're used to. It's a lot more punishing than it is rewarding. And a lot of games have become a lot more rewarding up front in order to get you hooked and keep you playing, and then provide additional rewards as you go. The thing that is really interesting that Under the Tree does is that it mixes those two worlds. So if you play the original Wizardry 1, that is like one of the most punishing games that has ever been made. It is insanely frustrating to play, especially if you're going in cold, as we did in the 80s, where it's extremely unclear what you're supposed to do. Hopefully you got a buddy maybe who played the game and kind of knows what to do to help shepherd you around. Hopefully you have access to the gigantic manual, because you need it in order to figure out exactly what's going on. Under the Tree does not require any of those things, although from a manual standpoint, I don't know, Ryan, if you had read the walkthrough or the FAQ that were posted
on... No, I did not.
...the site. Okay. So during the last couple of weeks, I posted a suggestion in the Discord, and the dev is a member of our Discord, and so they were posting as well and answering questions from different Discord members, and I really appreciated that participation, because they were able to point out all the places where I wasn't reading, which is good. But one of my initial suggestions was, hey, you know, there's not much of a backstory in this game, and those older games would have paragraphs and paragraphs of story that you would read in the manual before playing, or like in the case of Dragon Wars, you had to have the manual with you all the time, because it would say see paragraph 6 instead of writing out the text in the game. I found myself confused at first as to what the goal is. You know, who created this dungeon? What is the point? The subtitle of Wizardry 1 is the playing ground of the Mad Overlord, I believe. And so you have kind of an idea going in, you know, what your goal is. The proving ground of the Mad Overlord. There we go. In this game, I figure I'm going under the tree, but I don't really know exactly what's going on. I was able to infer some things, but I was a little confused. And part of that was my own doggone fault, Ryan, as I found out, because there's a notebook that accrues as you wander around on each floor. You'll find little scraps of paper, like notes, that the monsters have been writing each other, explaining, you know, how staffing changes are happening on this floor, or explaining shortcuts and things. And all those are collected in a little submenu called Notebook. And I totally ignored that submenu, and it had all the little snippets of story that I was looking for. It's pretty light, the story, but it is there. And, you know, it explains a bit about your motivations and so forth. So, anyway, this is a really long-winded response to your your notes there.
Well, I'm glad it was, because it gave me a chance to look at that walkthrough, which is so helpful already, just looking at it in the time you've been talking. So the first title is Monsters Are Too Tough. I can't open the chests. I need a better weapon. What do I do? And it tells you answers to all this. In fact, I scrolled down to that lock picking section, and boy, howdy, was that ever helpful. I wish that these clues were somewhere in game,
tutorialized.
That I could not have to go to the internet to learn how to play the game that's in my hand. But that this is super helpful. And Don, do you mind tossing this in the show notes for today's episode? Nick just put it in the our show notes. Because I think this would be super great. If by chance Don doesn't get to it, which I wouldn't blame him, he's got a lot of going on. You can get to this via the frequently asked questions on the Under the Tree Itch page. If you click on that, it's going to take you to the facts, but up along top, it also gives you a number of other menu items, one of which is walkthrough. So click a McCade on that, and it'll take you to this super handy.
Well, here's the other cool thing. The dev heard us chatting about the game and saw some confusion there about accessing different aspects of the walkthrough and making it easier to get at this information. They added a little QR code into the game, and that update has already been pushed through Catalog. So if you bought this on Catalog, it's already been updated, and you have access to this QR code that'll take you straight to the FAQ.
Oh, interesting. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love it when the developers are so interested in feedback and will hang out in our Discord during the couple weeks that we have a game on and just really fine-tune their games. We've seen that on so many of our weekly choices. It's really incredible to have that sort of instant feedback for these games. Big kudos to not only the Under the Tree dev, but the many, many devs that have come and participated in our Discord over the weeks and months and years we've been doing this.
Yeah, it's really kind of them. And this dev has been really patient in explaining to me various aspects of the game. And I really appreciate it. So lockpicking, let's talk about that. I know Don has the most experience with the lockpicking and had a similar experience to you with pick destruction. So my question to both of you is, were you using the crank to locate your pick? Okay. My feeling is that it's harder to use the crank on those very easy chests, the very first ones that you come across, essentially all the ones on that first floor. And if you use the D-pad instead to center your pick and then hold the up button, I believe, on the D-pad, it'll attempt to pick. And if it's not in the right spot, eventually it'll wiggle the lock pick and you stop picking, move the pick to another area, and try again. To prevent breakage, you just have to prevent, I think it's 4 wiggles in a row. So if you get 3 and you're like no closer to the answer, just back out and then attempt again. And it'll be a different spot this time, but you won't have broken a pick.
How do you back out? Down button?
I think you just hit B. Yeah.
Okay.
And with that technique, now I've got, you know, like a million lockpicks, and I rarely ever break one. In fact, I'm so confident now that I'll just bump pick the lock. And by that, I mean, I will just wiggle the thing around on the very hard difficulty chests down at the bottom of the dungeon. There's a very specific position that the pick has to be in before you can actually open the chest. And rather than spend a bunch of time locating it, because I have so many picks and they're disposable essentially to me now, I'll just open up the crank and then get it moving, figure out where the lock starts moving, and just kind of bump it back and forth in that area, and it kind of cheeses the lock open. That is kind of similar to how a real world lock works too. But anyway, I really like the lockpicking minigame, and it seems like you all didn't quite get into it that much, but I found the minigames to be charming and interesting.
Maybe if I had a little more knowledge and understanding of how it worked, it would have gone better. But as it stood, all three of my picks just snapped
evaporated.
Away.
And
I was like, well, how do I get anything out of this? How do I get my swords? How do I get my armor? Because it all seems like it needs those additional materials, which I'm now locked out of.
So you can get more picks. So one of the shopkeepers is that thief character that I mentioned, and so they run a store that has questionable goods, and they sell packs of one or packs of 10 lockpicks at a time. So you can just buy, you know, as many as you can afford. I think a pack of 10 is 50 coins.
Is that spidery guy?
Yes, I think so. It's the one in the cave looking place. That's the game. You know, I haven't finished it. I know you haven't finished it. I know Don hasn't finished it. So
it sounds like you're getting pretty close, though.
I really tried to make it to the end, and I really wish that I had enough time to do it. I did devote a lot of time to this game because I really, really enjoy it. This the reason I picked this game is because I figured this would be right up my alley, and it turned out to be. So one other thing I'd like to mention about the game is mini games. So we kind of talked about the lock picking one, but on each floor of the dungeon, there's an arcade cabinet that's set up that the boss monster is set up to improve morale for the monsters, I suppose. And on each of the floors of the dungeon, you get a token, which you can use with the arcade game. And it's usually located like a step or two away from the arcade cabinet, so you're not having to, you know, jump through a bunch of hoops to find the token to use on that floor. Each of the floors has a separate mini game. The first one is a mini game that allows you to earn items. So you can sit there and farm a bunch of items and then sell them to the shops if you need money. And it's really, really helpful. There are each of the different games is very different. At first, I was thinking that there were going to be a lot of I'm a little spoiler here, but I was thinking there were going to be a lot of like gambling type games or arcade type games. But it's a mixture. There's a broad variety. I'm so impressed with each of these. Every time I come across one, I'm like, oh, that's the inspiration for that thing. It's really fun, and it does break up the monotonous aspect of grinding. So as you're running through this dungeon over and over and over again, you know, you've got to make it back to where you died previously, and it is challenging. But those mini games really break it up. So it's cool.
Well, as much of a challenge as I had getting into the game, I will say on its behalf, I probably tried to undertake this quest, this challenge, about the worst week that I could have. This was an incredibly impacted couple of weeks of my life. Coming down the home stretch of the semester, inputting grades, getting ready to fly out of the state in 36 hours from this recording, just preparing for Eisner Awards that I'm going to be judging here in 36 hours. Just there's a lot going on in my life, and I wish I had more time to devote to it. So I'm sorry that I wasn't able to give it a very fair shake this week. I'm glad to see this walkthrough. This looks incredible. This would have been super helpful for me once I popped all my lock picks in there. Didn't know what to do. But Don, we haven't heard much from you about this game. You want to chime in here and give some thoughts?
Yeah, we're over time. But I played about 2 hours. I broke over 20 picks. There's over 500 words in this lockpicking explanation. I was super frustrated. I knew I needed 10. I knew it was in the trunk or the chest. I gave it my all to try this thing and couldn't get it open and was just getting frustrated. So I gave up and knew it was a game for someone else to play.
Well, not every game is for everybody. And this is a game of very particular taste. So if it is not for you, that's totally fine. Thanks very much for giving it a go, though. I really appreciate both of you, especially with how busy we all are, giving it a go and really making the attempt with it. Sorry for picking such a big, deep game. This is probably the deepest or the lengthiest playdate game that I think we've ever had on the show.
You know, I didn't get very far in it, but I can tell just from my brief time in it that there's a lot going on in this game. So if anybody was balking at the price of this, you should not. Like, there's a lot of game here to experience.
I bought it during the catalog sale, and yeah, I was looking forward to it. It's a game that people that like these games will love, I think.
Yeah.
It wasn't for me, and that's okay. Like you said, not every game is for everybody, and that's, I like that the three of us usually have different games of the week, distinct games.
Totally.
So, and I hope, it's no problem. I'm not upset about it or anything.
Yeah, I hope none of us, neither three of us, ever feel apologetic for the game we're picking. Like, even if it's not the other two's cup of tea, I'm still glad that I got a chance to try a game like this. Like, this would not have been a Ryan pick of the week, but I'm glad that it's a Nick pick of the week, and then I get to try a really different game. So thank you for picking this, Nick, and thank you to the dev for making this huge experience. Yeah, nice work.
Well, thank you all. One last thing, the artwork. I really, really enjoy the art style. I find it very charming. The little motion graphics, very limited animations. If you're familiar with Bard's Tale, it's that style of animation. So just a handful of frames per thing, but absolutely everything is animated in some way. Very cool.
Very cool. All right. Well, thank you, Nick, for that pick of the week. And speaking of our next episode's pick of the week, it's coming from me. And I had a catalog game I thought I was going to pick for next week. But then, as usual, Don exposes me to a great many things in his indie inventory, and I'm switching it up. I would like to play No Caddy Needed for my pick of the week. That game just looks incredible. It's on itch. I love being able to highlight games that are not on catalog because, you know, they just don't get as many eyeballs on him. So let's switch it over to No Caddy Needed, and we'll see how we all do with another golfing game after Four Track the other week.
All right.
Cool.
Yeah, sounds great. To this one too. Yeah, this looks like a little more traditional take on golf, but like a really polished one at that. So see what we do. All right, so that's going to bring us out. Don's already told us we're over our limit, so let's run through this. You can email Don at helloplaydatepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us at playdatepodcast.com. That's where you'll find the old, podcast. We're on the social medias. We're on the Discord. We're on the things. Don, you always have things I miss. Please help me out here. Nobody's still calling up the bingo tip line. So Nicholas P. Baldridge has a bingos line that you can call and leave us Hello Playdate podcast messages on at 724-BINGOS-1. That's 724-246-4671. Please send us a note there. I'd love to hear from you. I don't know if Don wants to edit you in or not, but I'd love to hear you. So call it up. Let us know what you're thinking. We're also on Hello Playdate over on the gram. What I missed, yeah. Don?
Honestly, I haven't been that active on the socials lately, but please drop us a note to get us more active, and we will say hi, and we'll catch you soon.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.